Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo-woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrand. I am joined, as always, by my good friend, my colleague, my co-host of many years. His name is Dan Rubenstein. You can follow us on Twitter at Solid Verbal. Look for us on Facebook at facebook.com/solidverbal. And if you like the show, we are out on iTunes at itunes.com/solidverbal. Dan Rubenstein.
Yeah.
No Oregon games yesterday to put you in a bad mood. How are you?
I'm good. I have thoughts on pitch counts. I have thoughts on infield shifts.
Yeah.
I have thoughts on late game momentum. Mike Montero, Ty, Clayton Kershaw on short rest. Come on, what are we talking about here?
I will also add, it's very nice of you, very kind of you. I know you're a busy guy.
Yeah.
I'm honored that you're able to pry yourself away from your new podcast, War on Milk, and join us here for a lively college football discussion this Sunday. Thank you so much.
Listen, Ty, I am at a constant war. I'm in constant war with Big Dairy. And listen, I picked Wisconsin, so I'm confounding. I'm a question mark. But Big Dairy, Ty, they got to go down. It's time. They've had their run.
I have never seen such vitriol over Dairy industry.
Or, what yeah.
Did I say Derek industry?
Yeah, the Derek industry.
Okay, we'll get to some Derek Barnett chatter later. What I meant to say was dairy industry. Yeah, a lot of folks kind of razzled up about that.
I want beverages meant for baby cows.
Oh, stop it.
I want them very badly. Don't say bad things about baby cow water.
Let's talk about football. That's what we're here to do.
Okay.
I saw a great tweet from our friend Barrett over at Bleacher Report. He says that this college football night has a very strange feel. It's like a boring night out with friends that suddenly gets super weird on the Uber home. And I could not agree more.
To your friends start making out.
Yeah, just weird stuff going on in the back seat. You know, just terrible picks by me again. Though we did get our lock correct.
I was pretty good, Ty.
In Washington State. I'm speaking for myself and only myself. I went 2 for 10, I think.
Oof.
In our pick'em pool. Yeah, oof is right. But so look, we had a couple near misses by Ohio State, Clemson, Louisville, which nobody really saw coming. Some weird results with Arkansas over Ole Miss and Vandy over Georgia, and then Northwestern running it up on Michigan State in a shootout. Syracuse won by 2 scores over Virginia Tech. Then, of course, the total deconstruction humiliation of Tennessee on behalf of one Alabama.
Oh man, I wish we had time for some eulogies today, because there's some dirt I want to throw on some teams. God, Michigan State. I'm not ready to throw dirt on Tennessee. They're at a handicap, but man, Sparty, man, Notre Dame, man, so much.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to this show. As I told you, I got some Dunkin' Donuts in me here. Not a sponsor. Finally got some coffee in me. I'm ready to go. Let's have a listen to those Week 7 reverbs.
Alabama just beat Tennessee 49-10. That's Tennessee wins in a row. Ooh, baby, Jalen Hurts so good.
Hi, this is Luke calling from Des Moines, Iowa, living behind enemy lines.
This is Curtis calling from Greensboro, North Carolina.
Hi, this is Kate from Oregon.
Hi, this is Sarah.
And this is Molly.
We're in Kansas City,
but we met at UNL, just like Dan and Ty.
I think it's very impressive that Alabama's defense and special team outscored Tennessee in this game 14-10.
I just realized that the most devastating part of this whole loss is that I won't get to hear a zombie ball soundbite.
Guess what, Tennessee? You just got murdered. 10 in a row, roll tide.
I was just wondering which one of Tennessee's downfield passes you like the best.
Goodness gracious, Georgia! No!
At what point do I start getting afraid that Georgia accidentally hired Will Muschamp?
Just wanted to send a little love up to Tiger Heaven for LSU's Mike the Tiger VI, who passed away this week. Miss you, buddy. Go Tigers.
Dude! NC State kicker. Got Notre Dame spanked all over his foot.
Stan, you keep your damn lecherous eyes off of Willie Taggart. Also, Clemson doesn't rush the field every game. They simply gather at the paw on the field.
By my calculation, 38 minus 7 is greater than 17 minus 16. So by the transitive property, go Jackets!
Only Wake Forest fans can understand the satisfaction we feel when leaving an opponent's stadium and their fans are saying things like, man, I'm just glad we won that game.
And I live in Madison, so I just want to say, for anybody looking to make a road trip to a football game, come to Madison for a night game because it's amazing. So I'm just happy that JTV let us still win. Urban is somehow still, I think, undefeated in Churro games at Ohio State.
Now that's how you play big boy football.
I just high-fived a Nebraska fan as an Iowa fan because Wisconsin scored on Ohio State. This is the best sport in the world.
And the Huskers pulled out, even though we're an Auburn and Notre Dame fan. We're out for a bachelorette party, and we can't wait to hear about how wrong Dan was about the Huskers.
Oh, man. Our basketball team threw 54 points to Northwestern? Oh, that was our football team?
Over a calendar year. Six quarters. And then Texas scores 24 points in the third quarter against Iowa State. Are you not entertained, Dan?
Yeah, I think it should be very clear that WVU deserves to be in the top 10 now.
As a big Duck fan and Dan Rubenstein follower, I've been listening to Outkast before every Duck game the past couple years, but it seems the luck has worn off. What do I listen to now?
I think my secretly bad Sun Devils, it's not such a secret anymore.
Brian Kelly is no longer fighting his own staff. Now it's the Stanford staff.
Watching Notre Dame this season is like watching like a horrible horror movie.
I'm feeling a deep existential dread because apparently God made me a Notre Dame fan and I just want to crawl in a hole and die.
Crack open the caffeine-free Pepsi, everybody. There is a party in Provo tonight. Woo!
Western Michigan, still undefeated. Row that boat.
My dearest Catherine, today we were defeated. We hoped the rain would slow General Trubisky's advances, but even Mother Nature can't help me win more than 9 games. All my love, Mark Richt.
All right, there you go. Lively as always.
Mm-hmm.
What never, ever ceases to amaze me is the times at which people call in and leave some of these reverbs, because I'll go to bed at, like, just say midnight.
I think people are just sobering up at that point.
Right. I will wake up and there will be dozens upon dozens more of phone calls throughout the course of a night. People will even call in the next morning. I feel like it's a cathartic experience for a lot of verballers who dial in. So thank you as always. And
also a much better option than drunkenly calling your ex at 2 a.m.
You can
get emotional. You have the right to get emotional. You have the right to get wistful. You have the right to say, I think things are going to change. I think we're going to be brand new. But make it about your college football team, not about a relationship gone sour. So we're a service, Ty. That's what we are.
For free, a service. Yes. Where are we starting? Where do you want to go first?
Let's go with the obvious combination. Someone got murdered. Please, please stop. He's already dead game.
We had a request on Twitter to use that sound in tandem with our Alabama-Tennessee recap. So, wow, look.
One of two top 10 matchups, yeah.
One of two top 10 matchups. Final score, 49-10.
Mm-hmm.
In the SB Nation Read Option newsletter, which is authored by our friend Jason Kirk. If you haven't subscribed already, you should, but he highlights the 7 rudest things that Alabama did to Tennessee in their thorough destruction of Rocky Top. My favorite was the Nick Saban quote. Quote, when we play really good teams, the runs aren't always going to be so easy. Just a very subtle dig, like, oh, maybe they're not that good.
Right.
39 points. The victor will give you such confidence and such bravado, but really a total destruction of Tennessee in this one. I picked them. They were my home dog of the week. It did not work out quite so well.
No.
Bama with 438 rushing, 5 touchdowns on the ground. They averaged 8.9 yards per rush, Dan. When Bama's got that phase of the game going, when they control the pace of the game on offense, it's pretty much over before it starts, right?
Yeah, why don't they make the whole plane out of Derek Barnett's? That's what it felt like, that Tennessee just did not have the horses. And Alabama, once Alabama starts feeling good about itself, once they sort of smell a little bit of quit, we saw the offensive lineman on the sideline tweet out that Nick Saban was barking up whatever 35 points in the second half to not let up and to force them to quit, to force submission. That's what it all made such perfect sense watching it and thinking about that's how Nick Saban views the world. The fact that, I mean, one of the Ruder things was Bo Scarborough on that long run. I think it was like an 85-yard touchdown run.
He held the hand up?
Well, he held the hand up afterwards. That was definitely super rude. And not in terms of rude, but seeing him run down the sideline and Tennessee players, because he's such a big dude, you're like, well, Tennessee's going to sort of veer him out of bounds, you know, steer him out or trip him up or something like that. And they just sort of unwittingly gave him an escort to the end zone. They were just like shielding him. Like, no, it's cool. We just want to see it up close. Yeah, it was complete and utter destruction and something that was masked, though. And this is sort of, it's totally fine and it's such nitpicky garbage, but Jalen Hurts was not particularly good throwing the ball.
No, he wasn't.
He really wasn't. And that's a credit to the pass rush and Derek Barnett. And we saw that cool pick and the tip pass Derek Barnett caught. But against, this is true, against better teams, and we obviously look at the pass rush and defensive back talent of LSU, that's where it gets trickier for Alabama on the schedule moving forward. But Tennessee just didn't have anything to compete with. They, you know, everybody's talking about coming out in the second half strong. Josh Dobbs just did not know this Alabama defense. That's what it came down to. And every single time Alabama touched the ball, it just felt like they had space. They had room and just an impressive wall-to-wall performance.
Tennessee was outgained 594 to 163, which is a tough way to win a ball game unless you get a bunch of turnovers, which they didn't. Right. And you mentioned Josh Dobbs, but Jalen Hurd and Alvin Kamara combined for 2.3 yards per carry. Yeah. Just not enough to give you the balance I think you need to beat an Alabama squad. And look, elsewhere on the offense, just 11 first downs, which feels like a really low number for Tennessee, especially when you contrast it with what Alabama did, which was obviously a lot more productive. So this was a statement win for Alabama. This was definitely a game going to Knoxville. You thought, okay, there's a chance here just given Tennessee's talent, given the fact that they have played strongly in second halves. There's some promise there. Alabama would have none of it and asserted its will. Was this a crock potting? I feel like it was stronger than that.
No, I thought it was flash fry.
Yeah.
It just everything happened so quickly. You didn't know. It was sort of like a Mongolian barbecue. Just throw it all in there. It's all just going to come out tasty for one team.
Sort of like a Mongolian barbecue.
And will run through you. It will run through you like Mongolian barbecue. Yeah. And if you don't know by now, I mean, you do if you're an Alabama fan, but Daron Payne, Sean Dion Hamilton, these are all dudes that were just completely destructive of everything Tennessee tried to do offensively. They'll be drafted sooner rather than later. And they're household names, and if not, they soon will be.
Let's move on over to the Big Ten.
Yeah.
We had some interesting games going on in the Big Ten. You know, the Big Ten, through like the first half of the year, because that's where we're at, has really had some of the most compelling storylines, not just Ohio State and Michigan, but pretty much top to bottom. You can find something maybe outside of Purdue and outside of Illinois and Rutgers. Find something interesting with just about every team. And let's start with this Ohio State Wisconsin game. In a monsoon,
it's raining sideways.
In a monsoon here,
a brief monsoon,
right? But I gotta admit something to you,
please,
and to Arvor Ballers, and let's be honest, to myself. I have been selling Wisconsin short since July. And they came out and beat LSU, and of course that was because LSU was just a mess, right? That's why they beat LSU. And then they pound Michigan State, but that's only because Michigan State was kind of a mess too without Connor Cook, and they were just finding their way. And then they lost to Michigan in that ugly game, but only by a 7-point margin.
Held
in fairness,
14, yeah.
And I was like, look, we knew this offense wasn't any good. This is bound to happen,
right?
I say it to you. And I say it to you, Ty Hildenbrandt, that you are full of crap.
Yeah, man.
This is a solid football team. They are playing the kind of unsexy football that sometimes can blind you from the fact that they're actually really good.
I don't even think it would be unsexy. Sorry,
it was
continue,
unsexy. It's unsexy.
I think their passing game is unsexy, but everything else I thought was great.
This was an outstanding and evenly matched football game that I thought really did a good job displaying the resolve that both teams have. This was a good game. Ohio State won 30-23 on the road in overtime, Dan. What was your takeaway here?
Well, first of all, when you said that you were going to concede something at the top, I thought it was going to go along the lines, because you do know better than anybody else that 100% of the time I am right or wrong.
Correct.
I thought you were going to concede. Dan, you completely nailed this game.
You did nail this game.
I'm mad enough
to admit that you nailed the game. I'm okay with that. You did a good job on this one.
A good defense in a tough place to play, and Ohio State has those weird night game struggles against teams with tough defenses on the road. And when JT Barrett runs it a ton, and certainly they needed him to run it a ton, but Mike Weber, for whatever reason, was not getting the ball in the first half, that Ohio State fails to separate themselves from good teams when JT Barrett does carry so much the load. So a combined, I think, 50 touches between his passes and his runs for JT Barrett, which is fine. He's crazy talented, but the big thing I took away from this game is Wisconsin with any sort of efficient passing attack. And within the context of what Wisconsin's done through the air this year, it was fine. Alex Hornibrook connected early on a couple balls, found an open, I think it was Jazz Peavy, streaking along the seam early for a touchdown. The story to me, though, was how much better Wisconsin's offensive line on the ground. Look, they still struggled when Ohio State would put in there like, hey, we have 11 pass rushers on the field. Do whatever you'd like. It's not going to happen. That's the package that Ohio State went to near the end of the game. But Corey Clement getting loose for a couple of big runs, Jazz Peavy with all those fly sweeps. I thought the game plan from Wisconsin and Paul Christ and that offense was, especially against a young Ohio State defense, to sort of test how disciplined they could be. I thought it was genius. I thought it was great. And even though Alex Hornibrook is B-, C-plus at best, they put everybody in position to win that game. And Ohio State eventually outdid them. And JT Barrett had to make plays and extend the pocket, whatever he had to do. And it was impressive, albeit not excellent. Good for Ohio State for surviving a game like this against a very, very, very tough Wisconsin team who... They're somewhere between the first and the second tier of the Big Ten, because they don't look a step below Ohio State or Michigan at this point. They just don't have a quarterback, and that's okay.
They do have a quarterback, but he's still young, and yes, I feel like his upside is somewhat limited. But you brought up a really good point about Paul Christ. He did try some different stuff in this game to keep Ohio State off balance. You think of Wisconsin, and you think of an offensive line that's going to power rush and catch you off guard here and there with play action. But that's a pretty big box in which you can still find creative ways to run your offense. And Paul Christ, I thought, did a good job showcasing that. The jet sweeps to Jazz Peavy were interesting. He threw a lot out of formations that looked run heavy. Mm-hmm. So that was interesting to see on the offensive side for Wisconsin, testing discipline, as you described. And JT Barrett, again, did a lot on the ground because he had to.
Yeah.
But had some really big throws on the run. Really big throws on the run.
Yeah.
We have questioned his abilities as a passer, but it doesn't get much bigger than this kind of game at night, again, on the road, overcame that interception in the midst of the monsoon, and still on the run, dropping dimes into tight spots. I was really impressed with him coming to play when he had to.
Yeah, against a capital D dangerous defense.
Yeah, yeah.
This Wisconsin defense, if they're going to give Ohio State's offense trouble, even with young receivers, they will give literally anybody in the country trouble. I mean, especially after Jalen Hurts struggled with accuracy and precision.
Ohio State is on the road at night next week against Penn State.
Yeah.
Then they got Northwestern, then Nebraska. Of course, they've got that biggie with Michigan later in the year. I don't know if any of those teams pose a huge threat to Ohio State, but they are interesting games. More interesting games than I think we would have thought maybe like 3 weeks ago. Because
yeah,
Penn State is sound defensively, even though they're banged up. They're still playing all right. Their offense has improved. Northwestern's been an incredible story to follow in the Big Ten. We'll talk about them a little later. And Nebraska is 6-0 for the first time in 15 years. So on top of that Michigan game, there are some storylines to follow here. It's not going to be a cakewalk for Ohio State.
secretly entertaining Big Ten. Like you're on a plane and you happen to just start watching episodes of a TV show that you never really wanted to watch, but now you're watching, you're like, I'm on board with this. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to get to San Diego quicker. Yeah.
All right. Nebraska 27, Indiana 22. Mm-hmm. While we're in the Big Ten, let's touch base on this game. Nebraska 6-0, as I said, for the first time in 15 years. You and I were like young college pups back in the day.
This is true.
The last time this happened. Do you remember how we talked on Wednesday about how Nebraska's luck sort of changed this year compared to last year?
True. Yes, I do.
I'm not going to say that this was like a lucky win because I don't think that does it justice, but let's just say that there were plenty of chances here for Nebraska to snap back into last year's form and blow this game. They had some bounces, some calls, some things go their way. This was after they jumped out to an early 17-0 lead in the first quarter. And you kind of knew that that lead wasn't going to hold against Indiana because Indiana is such a scrappy team. But, you know, Nebraska did what it needed to do. They got a big pass play late in the game, which kind of sprung them loose and gave them more cushion with which to work.
Yeah.
That was ultimately what gave them enough clearance here to not only win, but cover that spread. Is it a front door cover?
I guess.
Borderline. Yeah. I'm not going to play the sound, but borderline front door cover. They've got an interesting one in 2 weeks against Wisconsin, which should help us define more of the Big Ten West, but a nice win for them on the road in Bloomington. This was not an easy game.
No, I just like to see Nebraska separate themselves from somebody decent. And Tommy Armstrong struggled in this game, threw a couple picks, didn't complete half of his passes. I think heaps of praise should be put on Terrell Newby, who really put the team on his shoulders, especially late, goes over 100 yards and was the workhorse of this offense. It was disappointing to see the way in which Indiana gave up big pass plays. You had that crazy bobble early on. I think it was, to Brandon Riley?
I think so.
That play?
I think so, yeah.
That was to Brandon Riley. You had the play in which two Indiana safeties ran into each other.
That was a big touchdown.
It's a huge touchdown, and I don't want this to be misconstrued. Nebraska was good. They put themselves into position to win this game, and they took advantage of mistakes. That is what plain and simple good teams do. Nebraska deserves to be a top 10 team. That's fine. I was disappointed in which the way Indiana lost this game, because the defense, other than those two crazy plays, came to play, did a really good job against this Nebraska team. And even with Nebraska doing a very good job of shutting Indiana down on the ground, I think they had one long run, but outside of that, there really was nothing to be had offensively for Indiana on the ground. Was disappointed by Kevin Wilson's play calling and lack of aggression at certain points, but man, good for Mike Riley, good for the adjustments that this both the offense and defense made. It's Mark Banker, I believe, their defensive coordinator, was thoroughly impressed with how he kept this Nebraska team together. Good win on the road. Absolutely good win.
Good win on the road. Let's shift gears and go on over to ACC football, Dan.
Yeah, let's do that.
Weird weekend in the ACC.
Yeah, man. It's all over the place.
Weird freaking weekend in the ACC. Let's start with, I believe, the game on Friday night?
That's correct, yes.
Between Louisville and Duke. I was out with the solid wife during this game eating some Thai food.
Oh, what'd you order?
I just went pad Thai.
Come on, Thai. It's your name. You have to be more adventurous when the type of food you're eating is also your first name.
Well, they gave me an option, I'll have you know, on spice level between 1 and 5. And I got saucy and went level 2, Dan.
What did the solid wife order? Did she go more adventurous?
I think she went pad CU.
I like pad CU, pad Kimau. Sure.
Yeah, she went Penang pad curry. CU. That's usually her thing. But anyway, we were out.
Massaman curry? I'm just naming things I like.
You're right over there.
I'm okay. I want Thai food now.
Mama H was peppering me with text messages during our meal because I wasn't watching the game. And so I get these messages, and as I've described before, it's one of those situations where you fire up the app on your phone to check scores, and you keep refreshing it, thinking, is this stuck? Let's go. Why is this 17-14 in favor of Louisville? Louisville did not trail at any point in this game, but it was tight late. It was 17-14 late in this game. Duke was not at all intimidated. They never let Louisville take full control of the football game. They never led, but they never were so far out of it that you felt like they couldn't win. They did well on third downs, 8 for 16. They had no turnovers. They did a good job containing at least the passing version of Lamar Jackson in this game, where they fell a little bit short. And this isn't any knock on them, because no one's really been able to do it all year. On the ground, Lamar Jackson, that's where he got him. 21 carries, 144 yards and a touchdown, including, you know, the big one after Duke ran into Louisville's kicker, which set up that late touchdown. So a little bit of a surprise to look at the final scoreline here and see 24-14, especially after what we've seen from Louisville all season long, where they're just blowing the doors off teams.
Yeah, I thought Duke did a great job, and I only watched this game intermittently on my phone. I was at a party Friday night, and Louisville clearly could not take advantage of the very few possessions that they have. I thought that was on account of Duke really slowing the game down, shortening Louisville's ability to put together interesting, excellent, longer drives, which is tough when Lamar Jackson can score so quickly and at will. But Louisville, in the second half, I don't have it in front of me how many drives Louisville actually had, but it wasn't a ton. And I hate to see a game kind of decided on a roughing the kicker penalty, and it seemed like a good enough call, but it's just a bummer of a call to see, because Louisville missed that field goal and Duke would have had a shot to drive down the field.
Yeah,
you're right. I think it was just a matter of good pass defense from Duke, limiting Lamar Jackson and the ability to stretch the field through the air, and sound play calling and timely plays. They came through on third down. They controlled the ball. They weren't great on the ground. They weren't great through the air, but in bigger moments, they came through. And a good survival from Louisville. Although I think that, I mean, as much as it can be, I think it's sort of the blueprint moving forward. Not that there are all that many teams that can take advantage, but they have now what we consider to be a pretty decent NC State team
in
a couple weeks, I believe.
Yep.
And a Houston team, which who knows what to expect now in sort of mid to late November.
I think this just kind of underscores the fact that even the best teams are vulnerable.
Sure.
Maybe not Alabama. They don't count. But everybody else has an Achilles heel.
I think Alabama is vulnerable. It just has to be the right team.
Has to be the right perfect
it has
storm.
To be the, yeah. It has to be the right defense to force Alabama to throw the ball.
You mentioned NC State. This was a strange game. All right.
Yeah.
Clemson won 24-17 in overtime. First things first, let's give credit to NC State's defense.
Yeah.
They weren't great at containing Clemson's offense, but what they were was super aggressive. And every tackle, someone was getting popped. They had the wherewithal to go for the ball in every play. And because of that, Clemson turned the ball over 4 times, including 3 straight possessions, to lead off the second half. And that really swung momentum in favor of NC State. They had ample opportunities to try and capitalize. They just couldn't do it because Clemson's defense is so good. Clemson had no trouble moving the football in NC State. That's what made this such a weird game. They had close to 500 yards, Dan, but they had turnovers that just killed all their momentum in their drives, stopped them dead in their tracks. On NC State's side, Dave Doran, Eli Drinkwitz, what an offensive game they called. Again, yards aren't just enough to beat Clemson. You got to put up points. But still, those yards are tough to come by against this defense. And they did a good job utilizing Jalen Samuels in the passing game, calling run plays for Matthew Days that not only like just gave him the ball, but also opened up cutback lanes for him, which is something that he took advantage of all throughout the game. NC State could have won this game. They had an opportunity late. They missed a field goal at the gun. Then Clemson scores in overtime. And NC State was good enough and probably should have won this football game.
Yeah, Clemson is now 9-0 when they lose the turnover margin by 2 or more turnovers. And that's madness.
Yeah.
That is completely unprecedented as far as I could find. And good for Clemson finding ways to win. But yes, they needed a 33-yard field goal miss to send it to overtime. Clemson was good enough on third downs. Aside from the field goal miss, NC State was a little bit sloppy penalty-wise, or a lot bit sloppy. That certainly didn't help. But yeah, good game plan. They ran the ball really well, the Wolfpack did. And the thing that's troubling about Clemson, as I pull up their schedule now, is first of all, Deshaun Watson just seems off. at times.
Yeah.
Just throwing behind receivers, just not in rhythm, and with a ridiculously talented receiving core. So they have Florida State in a couple weeks. I guess NC State, what's it called? NC State Louisville is next week. But Syracuse, frisky, but nothing special. I mean, they beat Virginia Tech. I'm impressed by it. They have Pitt. They have Wake on the road and South Carolina. Now, Pitt and Florida State sound like they stand out among those opponents at this point. I don't think Clemson will lose close if they keep playing like they play. Like, there is a possibility that Florida State, and I don't love Florida State, especially after yesterday struggling, but if Florida State is playing to its peak, could blow out Clemson.
Yeah.
Just in the same way that Tennessee, in the sloppiness catching up with them. Now, Clemson isn't beat up like Tennessee is, but somebody really good playing really well won't just get by Clemson. They might blow them out.
Hmm.
And that's weird to think about with how good Clemson is when they're not sloppy. So that's my big takeaway. Good for Clemson for surviving. I just don't think they're riding waves on a surfboard that's fallen apart, and it's not great.
Okay. I'll go with that.
Yeah.
Let's go over to the Big 12. West Virginia 48, Texas Tech 17. An unbelievable showing here for the Mountaineers.
Yeah.
Just a dominating show. Now, 650 yards of offense against Texas Tech isn't all that surprising. But for your defense to hold Texas Tech to just 379 yards, that is damn impressive.
Mm-hmm.
How seriously now should we take West Virginia? Because as we described on our preview show, this was kind of the leading edge of their Big 12 games, right? So home next week against TCU. Tell me, give me a percentage chance of a victory here for these remaining like seven games for West Virginia, okay?
Yeah.
Home against TCU next week.
63.
At Oklahoma State.
44.
Kansas at home.
9%. Big win for Kansas. Big program changing. Kansas at home, 81%.
At Texas.
70%.
Home against Oklahoma.
50.
At Iowa State.
73.
Home against Baylor.
47.
So you're looking at games now against Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, and Baylor. Those are the three big ones. Then there's a game in there against Texas, which could get interesting. But you're looking at this game, all of a sudden, you're thinking, all right, if West Virginia can play defense now, and if they can continue doing, again, I know it's Texas Tech, but they've had problems all year in the red zone. They scored in this game on all eight trips to the red zone. If they can remain efficient when they get those drives down inside opponents' 20s, that's trouble for other teams.
Yeah.
It's trouble. And so I kind of grapple with how seriously we should take West Virginia at this point. Because I look at the schedule and I say, well, I like Oklahoma State and I like Mason Rudolph, but I think West Virginia could probably go on the road and beat them. I like Texas to some degree offensively, but certainly West Virginia can score. I like Baylor. I like Oklahoma. But again, we've seen vulnerability on both sides of that equation too. So I don't know. I'm on the fence here, but I'm pleasantly surprised by how well this defense played against Texas Tech.
So after yesterday's performance, Texas Tech against Power 5 teams, they're still a top 10 offense in terms of scoring offense or total points per game. So I don't think Texas Tech's defense has added too much to this total. But Texas Tech after yesterday is averaging 41 points a game against Power 5 opponents. Do you know how many teams have a better scoring defense after yesterday than West Virginia? How many Power 5 teams have a better scoring defense?
Enlighten me.
One. Precisely one. Michigan is the only Power 5 team that has allowed fewer points per game against Power 5 teams in West Virginia. West Virginia is a Big 12 team, Ty. Now, have they played big offenses thus far? No, they've played Missouri. BYU is not a Power 5 team. They've played Kansas State. Now they've played Texas Tech. So they have played an offense that has scored on pretty much everybody, even in shootout losses. West Virginia is, again, and I want to give it a second pause before I say this, a Big 12 team.
Big 12.
A good defense.
Yeah, yeah.
And that can get you far in life, Ty. And we got a tweet saying, like, I know you guys are going to talk about the West Virginia Texas Tech game, and I know you guys are going to say good things, but like, don't go overboard. We liked being underdogs. That time might be over.
Yeah. Yeah.
West Virginia, and I'm not as enamored with this West Virginia offense as I have been with previous years, but they're complete. They're running on the ground really well. They're throwing the ball at an efficient clip. Skylar Howard now has a good amount of experience. There's a lot to like about a West Virginia team with, in terms of home road splits, has a very nice schedule moving forward.
Yeah. Okay.
Where would you rank West Virginia? We're recording this before the polls have come out.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, what were they before? 20th? Somewhere in that range. There, yeah. I think you got to bump them up at least into the top 15.
Yeah,
I would. I mean, based on defense alone, I'd put them in the top 15.
Yeah, going into today, they were number 20. I would say with Boise State struggles, Virginia Tech, Miami losing, Houston struggling, Ole Miss losing, Baylor only beating Kansas, Nebraska having an up and down, but a good win. I'd put them like 12 or 13.
Yeah, definitely top 15 for me.
Yeah, good for the ears.
All right, let's pay the bills.
Pay those bills.
Cricketshirts.com. Have you ever been there?
I have.
CRIQUETSHIRTS.com. Cricketshirts.com. Dan, it is the perfect mix of old school style and modern design.
Mm-hmm.
So they sent us a couple shirts to try out.
Very, very crisp shirts. I like them a lot.
The shirt that they sent me was a golf shirt.
Okay.
Which they say, you know, they all have these taglines about, oh, it's super soft and we use special organic cotton and it's comfortable in the 19th hole, just like it would be on the first or the 18th hole, right? Everybody mm-hmm. says it. I tried this shirt on. I felt like it instantly took 4 strokes off my game.
Nice.
I'm not kidding. And I know you've complained about how you feel on the golf course before. But
I just want to look good. I don't care about my actual game.
I care about my good. Game. All right. I want something that's not too baggy, not too skinny, something that has a collar in it
right.
that actually stays from round to round or just from day to day if you're wearing it out and about. I can't tell you how many collared shirts I have. The collars kind of like peel up. You know, it mm-hmm. looks like they're wings.
Garbage collars.
Yeah. Not going to be a problem here with Cricket shirts. They've also got a no hassle free return and exchange policy, which is awesome. So it's a great fitting shirt. It mixes old school with new school. It's inspired by guys like Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer and JFK, talking about some heavy hitters in the
yeah.
world in which we live.
Shingo Katayama is not at all affiliated.
So listen, you got to go on out to cricketshirts.com and give this a shot. The fabric is soft. It fits great. And I wouldn't just say it. Believe me, they sent it. We gave it a shot. I'm all in here. So you can try it too. 20% off your very first nice. Purchase if you go to cricketshirts.com/solid. Cricketshirts.com/solid. Enter the promo code solid at checkout. You'll get 20% off your first purchase, Dan.
It's a good deal.
Nice shirt, right?
No, absolutely nice shirt. I was prepared to talk about Cricket Wireless, and I did not have many things to say about burner phones, Ty.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I did not have many things. So Cricket shirts, way better read.
We just got done talking about West Virginia in the Big 12. Where do you want to go next?
Do you want to stay in the Big 12? Let's go to the Pac-12
okay.
real quick before we jump into some of the bigger matchups elsewhere. Just because, listen, I stayed up for the West Coast games, as should you.
Okay.
In the Pac-12 yesterday, USC established themselves as being a team closer to being good. They, even on the road, should pull away from Arizona. Arizona's a mess this year. They're so beat up at quarterback. The defense has struggled most of the year. That Washington game looks to be an aberration. Sam Darnold looks really good, Ty. Sam Darnold looks like a top 20 quarterback right
five,
now. He's sort of
five touchdowns, I saw.
Yeah, he's at the point where DeShone Kizer was last year. We're like, it's pretty impressive that he's come in for this big name program and succeeded with talent around him and looks immediately comfortable. And that we have not seen at all times with USC quarterbacks recently. So he is running for 7 yards on 3rd and 5s. He is extending plays. Juju Smith-Schuster had a really nice game before he left with, I hope he's okay, a back injury. Stephen Mitchell also left the game. So USC beat up a little bit on offense, but did a lot of really good things well, are deep at running back. Defensively, they shut down everything Arizona tried to do, which includes, Ty, and I know you'll appreciate this, having watched Maryland football in the last 5 to 7 years. They put in a fourth string tight end at quarterback.
Nice. Okay.
It wasn't a linebacker.
Yeah.
But it was an ugly day for Arizona. And I think the problems of Arizona go a little bit deeper than they thought when they sort of swapped out defensive coordinators last year, or Jeff Castile at defensive coordinator. And Arizona's got a long way back. But again, they started a 17-year-old at quarterback. It's going to be fine once whoever, I think Brandon Dawkins should be back in a couple weeks. They'll be better, but good for USC. Big win for the Trojans. And I don't know if you have any thoughts about that game, but I was then going to move to Stanford Notre Dame.
Oh, God.
Do you have any USC Arizona thoughts?
I thought USC looked really impressive.
Yeah.
And it's fun to watch their offense mature now with Sam D'Arnold,
excuse me.
Yeah. Juju looked pretty good as well. It's nice to see him getting some more action. That was a talking point at the start of the year. Why isn't he more active in this offense? That has seemingly been rectified, and I'm happy to see it because he's an NFL talent.
Yep.
Notre Dame and Stanford. Stanford wins 17-10. How much of this did you see?
I had this on one of the small screens about 65% of the time.
How small a screen?
It was like a picture-in-picture on a very big screen.
It should have been a picture inside of that smaller picture. If you watched this entire game, you needed
it
like
been telegraph updates.
Yeah, you needed a heavy dose of caffeine to feel good about it. This was ugly on both sides of the football. This is an ugly football game. Really, what it came down to was the fact that Stanford was able to run effectively with Bryce Love, who was filling in place of the injured Christian McCaffrey. He had a nice game, and they were able to control the pace of play. But also because Notre Dame could not convert drives, and DeShone Kizer caught whatever like bug is going around in that locker room.
Yeah,
it's almost like he and DeShone Watson at times are marching to the same drummer. Except Kizer's got it a lot worse, and we've seen it now, I guess, kind of manifest in the last two games or so, but he's inaccurate. He was pulled in this game, at least for like a brief cup of coffee, by Malik Zaire, who came in and couldn't really do much either. But, you know, it's if it's not one thing, it's another for Notre Dame. The defense, for their part, has actually improved. And we're not talking leaps and bounds, but we're talking baby steps. They got more pressure on Stanford's quarterback. They had three sacks in this game, which, believe it or not, is a big deal for this Notre Dame defense.
They want it, Ty.
Yeah, they do want it. And it's about time they got some because, quite honestly, it's been a bit of a mess in the front seven. They were finally able to generate some pressure, which is awesome. And they've at least looked somewhat competent on the defensive side of the football the last couple weeks now since getting rid of Brian Van Gorder. Not leaps and bounds, but baby steps forward. I'm okay with it. Offensively, though, DeShone Kizer looks a mess. They still can't get the ground game going. I don't know what's going on there. So as Mama H texted me last night, she's pretty much given up on Notre Dame football this year and is now actively looking for another team that she can watch intently and root for on a week-to-week basis.
Well, at least Notre Dame gave up one offensive touchdown in a loss. So they're moving forward in some sort of weird, strange fashion because it was a pick six, right? That DeShone Kizer threw that gave Stanford one of their scores.
Yep.
So Stanford is still in kind of a dumb place. Not having Christian McCaffrey didn't make as big a difference because, as you mentioned, Bryce Love was very good, especially in short yardage situations. Put their offense on his back. Ryan Burns, I don't think, is anything special. Quarterback, and I believe, is he the first quarterback that David Shaw recruited to Stanford that has started?
I believe so, yeah.
Yes, I think Kevin Hogan redshirted. So maybe there's something about, listen, I don't buy into that too much just because I feel like development has been so good at Stanford at quarterback, and a lot of that has to do with David Shaw and his offensive coordinators. But Stanford's not that great. Solomon Thomas is, capital G, great on defense and disrupted Notre Dame's offensive line, which has been a very weird disappointment for me.
Yeah, I don't get
it. Notre Dame's offensive line is too talented to play like
this. I really, truly do not get it because this is a team that entering the season had Tarian Falston coming back from injury, Josh Adams, who had an incredible freshman campaign in 2015, and Dexter Williams, who looked the part, you know, and showed some burst and they were excited about. Three guys who I would say you take them to a bunch of other teams, they're probably all starters on their own.
Yeah.
That's a stable in the backfield. To not be able to run, is it's puzzling everyone who watches Notre Dame, and especially the people that cover Notre Dame on a daily basis. It's so confounding.
And I won't belabor the point, but I do not fault Malik Zaire for his struggles being inserted in the fashion that he is into that game. The offense, listen, if I don't have, big picture, a problem with playing multiple quarterbacks, if it is so situational, the way that, you know, Chris Leak and Tim Tebow coexisted for Florida way back when, or even the way that change of pace guys come in and they run specific types of systems where, you know, Malik Zaire comes in and they run some sort of wing T whatever, something to just sort of change things up that Notre Dame has practiced and is organized doing, but they're not. And it almost feels like, and I couldn't help but think about this as I was watching Malik Zaire come in and struggle to adjust to what Notre Dame was trying to do. Like if a friend of yours just showed up on your doorstep with like a 3-year-old having a tantrum and was just like, change of pace, why don't you figure out what to do with this kid? And you're like, wait, what? I'm just trying to watch Jeopardy.
Yeah.
It was a mess for Notre Dame, and they're now 2-5, and you had Stanford pegged as a winnable game.
It was a winnable game.
In their Illinois march to 6.
Yeah.
And now they have Miami, Navy, Army. Army who demolished the Leopards of Lafayette.
Yep.
Virginia Tech, who took a step back yesterday, and a USC team that looks better and better.
Yeah.
So there we are. Stanford, good ugly win. Got to get it, especially without Christian McCaffrey. You knew it wasn't probably going to be pretty on the road. Notre Dame, what the hell, man? You saw Jimmy Clausen tweeting out during the game?
Yeah, I saw that.
Why would Deshaun Kizer stay in South Bend if he's going to get yanked after one or two mistakes?
Oof, yep. Just getting rough. Excited about the Brandon Wimbush era next year. Okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Let's go back to the SEC.
Yeah.
Arkansas 34, Ole Miss 30. We were both appallingly wrong about this game.
I'd like to apologize. We were both super wrong. You're right.
This is a good game back and forth. Austin Allen was really good for Arkansas, and Arkansas figured out how to run. They figured out how to run. Raleigh Williams, 180 yards on the ground. Where was this all year?
Takes a little bit of time, Ty.
I guess.
There was a self crock potting.
Good for them. Nice win here, 34-30. I am interested to see where Arkansas goes from here, because their only two losses are to Alabama and A&M. This is obviously a very good football team. They still need to get better along the lines, but this was a good step forward for them. What I'm most interested in, though, is where Ole Miss goes from here, because they're 3-3 with three tough losses, right? FSU, Bama, and now Arkansas. But they've still got LSU, Auburn, and Texas A&M on the schedule. Even a team like Vandy could be tricky, given how many yards Ole Miss is consistently giving up on defense. So there are a lot of landmines lurking for the Rebels at this point.
Yeah, and Ole Miss, with the attention they're getting for off-the-field stuff, legitimate or not, the magnifying glass is a little bit stronger on Hugh Freeze at this point. I think you're right. The story is Arkansas, who made big stops defensively, highlighted by the end of the game. I think it was like a 4th-and-14 run, and they just stopped Chad Kelly a couple yards short, and the ball flung loose. And offensively, it's Raleigh Williams. It's the ability of the offensive line, not just opening up holes for Raleigh Williams in the run game, but for doing it in short yardage situations. You saw Cornelius at the end of the game. That's where they struggled most notably against Texas A&M a couple weeks ago, or a few weeks ago now. And to correct that against a still very good Ole Miss defensive front speaks volumes.
Yeah.
And Austin Allen was good, struggled to go downfield, I think, a little bit against the Landsharks. I know you love the Landsharks, but an impressive performance all around for Arkansas. Timely plays, and scoring 34 points against this Ole Miss team, it goes a long way. And especially since Chad Kelly, moments in this game, was very, very good. Struggled himself throwing the ball down the field a little bit, but found Evan Engram a ton, one of the better tight ends, if not in the SEC, the country. And Arkansas simply doing enough to outlast Ole Miss. It's big. And you're right, Arkansas's only lost to good teams, really good teams. And moving forward, who do they have? They have LSU.
Yeah.
They have Florida. They have, I mean, it's a Florida team with a lot of offensive questions still, even with a nice win yesterday. They have Mississippi State, who does not look great. They have Missouri, who does not look great. It's opening up a little bit. The Auburn game is going to be tough next week.
Yeah.
That's going to be rough.
Florida and LSU won. LSU actually had some trouble in the first half, but turned it on in the second against Southern Miss. They win 45-10. You mentioned Mississippi State. They went to double overtime on the road at BYU. BYU wins.
Yep.
I believe that would be a push because it was a 7-point line in favor of BYU. 28-21. Good game. Nice win for BYU. And then Vandy in Georgia. About that Kirby Smart hire, Dan.
Yeah. And before we get into that, I just want to very, very quickly mention Florida's got great defensive backs. Josh Augusta, defensive lineman from Missouri, who's openly campaigning for the Heisman Trophy, got a handoff at the goal line and scored a touchdown. And that was nice. A wonderful story. Yeah. Okay. Vandy, Georgia.
Kirby Smart. There were some interesting play calls here on the Georgia side of things. One that comes to mind, and I forget the exact situation, but it drives every college football fan nuts when you know you've got third and long and your quarterback, seemingly your play call, is begging for a throw short over the middle where someone can run with it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's great if, in fact, you're putting a player in a situation where he can dodge tackles. But it seemed in this particular situation that I can't specifically remember that the play was dead from the moment they snapped the ball.
Yeah.
And it's just weird play calls like that, throwing short of the chains. There were other situations in this game. I saw folks on Twitter were just pulling their hair out here, openly questioning now whether or not it was the right move to get rid of Mark Richt and go in the whole Kirby Smart direction. Vandy wins the game in Georgia by a 17-16 margin, Dan. This is a bit of a stunner, I thought.
Huge stunner. And part of the play calling could have been with how much Georgia's offensive line struggled to protect Jacob Eason, just figure out how to get the ball out of his hands quickly. I think there are better ways to go about that, but I think that probably weighed into it. Jacob Eason was running for his life and still had one of the better, if not best, games of his young college career. He completed nearly 75% of his passes, goes over 300 yards. And I think this speaks to what you're saying, though. He's got a really good arm. He can put the ball in places. This is not an issue where you're trying to map around a quarterback's weaknesses strength-wise.
Exactly.
So that's what was strange. The short yardage play calling was odd. I know they had a big play where they decided not to, and maybe he was beat up or something was wrong, not to give it to Nick Chubb, which seems odd, I would say. And the big waste of this is Georgia's defense was really good. Granted, Vanderbilt's offense is not all that special, and I'm trying to be as kind as possible. Georgia's defense gave up 171 total yards. They did not give up 2 yards per rush. They were lights out, and they should have been against Vanderbilt, and it's a wasted performance. So disappointing. Georgia couldn't move the chains a lot of the time on third down. They controlled the clock, and yet still take a big old step back. This is not a losable game for what Georgia has.
Like, was Jim Chaney over his billable hours and not available for this football game? What was the deal?
Offensive consultant Jim Chaney.
On some of these play calls.
Yeah.
A little bit
not
mad.
Pretty.
No. Okay.
And now, of course, they're going to beat Florida. That's just how the SEC
right.
works.
Right. Well, of course.
That's how it works.
In the Big Ten, some games that we didn't cover.
Yeah.
Illinois-Rutgers, big matchup here.
I love Illinois.
I saw that a Verballer by the name of Ken was at this game, took pictures, might have called in. Thank you, sir, for your service. We appreciate that.
Big words for Kendrick Foster. Good game.
Minnesota over Maryland 31-7. Nice win for
on
Sky
the road.
Umar.
Very nice. Yeah.
Iowa and Purdue in an odd shootout. 49-35. Iowa is the victor. And finally, Northwestern 54, Michigan State 40, Dan. You called this one, did you not?
It sounds like something I would call. Yeah, Michigan State, at a certain point, so you have trouble admitting. You want to believe, and I respect the optimism that you possess. You want to believe in teams. You want to believe people are going to turn it around. You want to believe teams are better than perhaps they've shown. I've watched a lot of Oregon football, and I'm very quick to make peace with, like, nah, they bad.
Okay.
They're garbage.
Well, it took me a while to get there with Michigan State. I've always kind of been there with Tyler O'Connor.
Who was fine.
He was fine in this game. You're right.
He was good. Yeah.
But that to me was like the main aspect of this team I wasn't buying into. Because you lose Connor Cook, you bring in a new guy, obviously there's going to be a bit of a step back. He's been okay. He was fine in this game. But defensively, to give up 54 to anybody, let alone Northwestern, that to me, I think, is what's most shocking about Michigan State this year.
It's not Michigan State. If you told me that there was a secret switch with Michigan State and West Virginia, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. This all is adding up. Michigan State can't run the ball and they can't play defense. 40 points should be enough for literally every team in the country to beat Northwestern.
Yeah.
And it was not. Tyler O'Connor did a nice job throwing downfield, creating big plays. They just couldn't get anything going on the ground. And Justin Jackson ran the hell all over Michigan State, almost 200 yards on the ground. I mean, he carried the ball a ton. Clayton Thorson was very good. He was efficient. And Northwestern's defense is flying around. I mean, they gave up 40 points, so it's not great, but they have talent back there and or up there. And I just, man, Michigan State, at this point, they haven't won a conference game. They're 2-4. Michigan State and Oregon, not all that dissimilar. And it's one of those things as well. I'm always curious why when teams that are going from being really good, like Michigan State has been for years, you would generally assume it's something to do with a non-strength of the head coach. Mark D'Antonio has a defensive background that you could at least say, well, the defense has been good, but they're losing a bunch of games 16-10. You're like, well, okay. Or Oregon's losing a bunch of games 52-49, but yeah, Mark Helfrich is an offensive guy, whatever. Not the case at all, Ty. They have Maryland, Michigan, Illinois, Rutgers, Ohio State, and Penn State. They could lose. They technically could lose to Maryland. I don't think it's going to happen. I'm not positive, though, at this point. They're going to lose to Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State. So that puts them at, 2-7. And then you start adding in wins. They might be fortunate to get to 5-7.
Boy.
What?
Sounds interesting. Okay, let's go to our second sponsor here before we round out the Big 12 and the ACC and the Pac-12. Dan, had a lot of folks email in, write in, send us notes about their experience right now with SeatGeek.
Yeah, that's true.
We said it time and time again. It's the first place you need to go if you're looking for tickets to a game or even a concert. We both have the app on our phone. I used it the other day. Just sort of look around, see what's available in the area. But the whole process is really designed to make it easier for you as a sports fan, as a music fan. What they do is give you a price comparison within their app, and they'll search multiple ticket sites up front, right in front of you, so that you don't have to go to each one individually. They score tickets so that you know which ones give you the most bang for your buck. So every ticket on the app is graded to give you a sense for where the value really is. So if there's anything underpriced, or, you know, if they're able to find a good deal out there, even if it's not underpriced, but just something that can help fit within your budget, SeatGeek's really good at doing that. And again, people have written in far and wide telling us how great the experience has been. Right now, if you are interested, Dan, you can get a $20 rebate off your first SeatGeek purchase. So it's a pretty good deal, and it's straightforward. All you got to do is download the SeatGeek app. That's spelled SeatGeek, SeatGeek. It's a free app in whatever app store you have. After you have it, go to the settings tab and add a promo code. Our promo code is Solid.
Easy.
After you buy something for the first time, they'll send you $20. And that's it. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. Done. Not much to it. Use the app. It's a fun app. Take our word for it. Take our Verballer's word for it. People have been using this like crazy. They've been using it like crazy. They really have. It's a free app. It's SeatGeek. After your first purchase of using the promo code Solid, you're going to get $20. That's it, and that's all.
Somebody had a really good idea that moving forward, I don't know what our SeatGeek sponsorship is moving forward. I don't have it in front of me, but to look up the cheapest or the most affordable Power 5 versus Power 5 matchup each week. That's fun for me. Because near the end of the season, we're going to get some doozies.
Yeah, we are.
Where would you like to go from here?
Let's talk about our Lord and Savior.
Oh, please.
The streak is dead.
Shane Beshizus.
The streak is dead. Texas finally scored after 720 some odd days against Iowa State.
726. Yep.
It wasn't pretty. at least not initially. At halftime, it was 6-3 in favor of Iowa State. Texas then turns it on in the third quarter. Some long touchdown passes from our Lord and Savior, Shane Beshizus.
Mm-hmm.
Texas holds Iowa State to just 6 points throughout, which was a big deal for that defense. Don't let anybody kid you. I don't care if it was Iowa State or if it was like South Dakota State.
Huge
holding
deal.
Anyone to 6 points at this juncture for Texas is a big deal. They go on to win 27-6 here, Dan. Any takeaways from a game like this?
Yeah, I mean, you nailed it. Obviously, the defense thing stands out. Not allowing anything into the end zone was huge for Texas. The fact that they focused for three or four full downs at a time and didn't let up anything. I think Iowa State missed out on converting, almost two-thirds of their third downs or more than two-thirds of their third down attempts. They couldn't throw the ball at all. And Iowa State, the record is a little bit misleading because they play good teams tough. They do not just sort of get blown out of the water. The first game of the season, be damned. That was just a dumb game to lose. But, and not that Northern Iowa is bad, but they should win that game. Texas needs to do this for more than 1 week in a row. That's the big takeaway I have moving forward. Texas just, look, they looked great. They played well defensively. They played well up front. They ran the ball relatively well. They did things, like if Texas is holding Iowa State to six and Iowa State just scored how many points, 40 whatever against Baylor, maybe Texas can hold other defenses, if there are other offenses, if this defense is playing on this level, to 20 points a game. 24 points a game. I don't believe that until I see it, but it is an encouraging first step. It's still a long back half of the Texas schedule. Moving forward, they have, let's see here, they have a winnable Kansas State team. I mean, Kansas State's a mess, especially now with how they're wounded at quarterback. They've got Baylor, Texas Tech, West Virginia, Kansas, and TCU. So 4 out of 6 are losable for Texas. I'm not feeling good about Texas Tech, but it could have been an aberration against a good defense. But those are still losable. I need to see Texas beat 3 of those teams to fully believe in Charlie Strong regaining control over the defense and the program as a whole.
By the way, Baylor is still undefeated. Not the most difficult game this weekend against Kansas, but nobody's talking about Baylor. My sense is that people are afraid to talk about Baylor.
Yeah.
Given all of the offseason stuff, and I get it. But in their final 6 games, they've got road spots at Oklahoma, West Virginia, and next week against Texas.
5 of 6 are very real. Yeah.
This is a schedule that's going to get tougher. I am curious to see how far that offense can take them. This is a team that, despite being in the limelight the last couple seasons, is now comfortably under the proverbial radar. And those are usually the teams that scare me. How deep does this Baylor team go?
So they're masking some football flaws. Offensively, they haven't been the same. Seth Russell has kind of struggled. He's been efficient mostly, but in terms of big plays and finding receivers down the field, Baylor is one or two steps behind where they've been. And I don't know what exactly it is. I mean, it's easy to say it's Art Briles, obviously. He's the offensive mind. He's the architect. But they still seem just off. So with this schedule, with how Baylor is built, I still think they can win 10 games. But I'm not as scared of this Baylor team and what they can do to overcome issues as I have been in years past.
I still think that Oklahoma is the best team in the Big 12. It seems as if they've finally found some rhythm.
Where's that Oklahoma-West Virginia game? That's in Morgantown, right?
In Morgantown, yes.
Great. Can't wait.
Oklahoma had a monster game from Dede Westbrook.
Yep.
A big game from Joe Mixon, who threw for a touchdown.
Hey.
And a pretty big game from Baker Mayfield as well, as they win 38-17 over K-State. I think they're the best team in the Big 12 at this point.
Yeah, I think it's not unreasonable to say Oklahoma's the best team in the Big 12 at this point. They haven't lost a conference game, but just like everybody else, basically in the country, there's a vulnerability to Oklahoma, and that defensive backfield can be picked apart still. I'd still be worried if I were an Oklahoma fan. I don't think there's anything anywhere near a certainty that Oklahoma is going to end up in this conversation at the end of the year.
Back to the ACC, Syracuse 31. Virginia Tech 17?
Heyo.
Did you see Dino Babers give his awesome victory speech?
Hell yes, I did.
I was fired up watching that this morning. I'm not going to lie. Big win for the Cuse at home. Virginia Tech apparently in a bit of a letdown spot here, which I don't know if any of us saw coming. Although, to your credit, you did say, never know. Be careful.
Carrier Dome's weird.
Big game for Eric Dungy, who had over 400 total yards. 311 through the air, which was something because Virginia Tech has been really good against the pass so far this season. So this was a statement win for Dino Babers in his very first season up there.
He did need to throw it more than 50 times to get
still,
there.
Still, though. Still.
Yes. An incredibly impressive performance from Eric Dungy, especially with how much he was tasked with doing. Scored a big touchdown. Was responsible for... They had a big trick play touchdown, I believe. By the way, I did not know this receiver existed. Syracuse has a receiver with the first name of Brisley.
Yep.
And that's wonderful. He had the trick play touchdown, the double pass. So, yes, a good program building win for Syracuse as they move forward. Virginia Tech, letdown spot, some untimeliness to the turnovers that they had. I mean, it's never good to have turnovers, but Virginia Tech did struggle in this first half, sort of picked it up in the second half, but really never got into a rhythm offensively. Good for Syracuse, good for Dino Babers. I don't know who Syracuse has moving forward, but they have Clemson, Florida State, and Pitt, two of which on the road, but good for Syracuse. Happy to see it.
North Carolina 20, Miami 13. Nice bounce back win here for North Carolina after they got crushed a week ago. Really good on third downs, 14 of 23. Somehow Ryan Switzer had 9 catches for 17 yards.
Hey, listen, anything is possible.
They also had 9 false start penalties, which is something they need to shore up, but a really good win for the Tar Heels, especially after losing by 31 a week ago. Miami had 2 more defensive linemen go down, Chad Thomas, Demetrius Jackson. Yeah. That's significant because they're already pretty nicked up on defense.
Yep.
What else? Good job by North Carolina, limiting damage here. 3 drives in particular in this game. I saw Miami had like 10 plays, 13 plays, 13 plays. Those 3 in particular stood out because all 3 amounted to field goal attempts and only 2 of them were converted. So instead of 7, they're getting 3. Mm-hmm. And in this case, it could have been 9. It was only 6.
And hey, North Carolina played well in the rain. That's a new thing.
It's a new thing, yeah.
They're balancing out the universe. A nice bounce back spot for North Carolina, who is now, man, North Carolina has beaten Florida State and Miami both on the road 2 out of 3 weeks.
Nice.
Nice. Very nice. New quarterback, too. I like it.
Pitt wins 45-31 over Virginia in another weird shootout.
Did you see what James Conner did?
I did.
They put him in at defensive end, and he had a quarterback hurry. He put on a spin move on a Virginia tackle and got to the quarterback. I assumed this was a thing that Pitt fans knew might happen at a certain point, perhaps. Awesome.
James freaking Conner. The year Terminator. Of James Conner. Yeah.
Yeah.
Georgia Tech 35, Georgia Southern 24. And then there was this whole FSU Wake game.
Yeah.
Florida State wins 17-6. What an ugly game. What an ugly game. 7 turnovers, but a big game for Travis Rudolph, who had 238 receiving.
Yeah.
Solid showing for Florida State's defense.
Especially up front, yeah.
Especially up front. They're starting to get a little healthier up front, which is good. Wake has now gone 5 straight games at Doak without scoring an offensive touchdown, which is just demoralizing.
Not great. Not great. Yeah, the way the Wake defense plays, which is solid, they force teams to sort of nickel and dime their way down the field, and Florida State eventually did get in that rhythm. But, yeah, I think you're right. I think the big takeaway is that Josh Sweat and DeMarcus Walker resumed getting after the quarterback, resumed. And John Wolford's been pretty decent. The Wake offense isn't all that great, but good for Florida State up front, swarming like they should be.
And then finally, walk me through wins by Colorado, Utah, and our joint lock of the week, Washington State.
Colorado, another wall-to-wall really nice performance. Seifo Lufau had the start. He was efficient throughout, coming back and starting his first game, I believe, since that Michigan game in which he was injured. Arizona State's, I mean, I talked about their 4-0 and their 4-1 as being a total smoke and mirror thing. I mean, they have been beat up. Manny Wilkins at quarterback has been beat up, and that's rough. Their past defense has been flat out bad all year, which is weird because their front has been really good against the run. They're sort of a weird split defense. But the story, I think, was Colorado. Seifo-Lufau, who is now, Colorado, they're now atop the Pac-12 South, I believe, tied with Utah. So the South runs through the Mountain Time Zone, Ty, as weird as that is. So these are two expansion teams that are actually working out for the conference, Big Ten. Philip Lindsay was great on the ground, had a couple huge plays for Colorado, and Colorado's good, Ty. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how to say it at this point. I think they have Stanford next, which will be a good barometer, but Colorado's in a really nice place. And then you mentioned Wazoo trying to give this game away. They really took advantage of a reeling UCLA team. The Bruins were without Josh Rosen. Mike Faithful, I think is how you pronounce his name. Had an awful first half, but brought them back in the second half. The story to me is UCLA has failed in transitioning to this new offense, especially on the ground. They can't move the ball at all. And it's not like Nate Starks and Soso Jumabo, and I don't know how to pronounce the last name of the guy who carried the ball a ton for UCLA last night, but it's not like they're not talented. The offensive line has struggled this year.
Did I see they just had 43 yards on the ground here?
43 yards on the ground, and it wasn't negative yardage for the quarterback because of sacks. It was Soso Jumabo had 2 for 12, Bolu, whatever, had 10 for 22, Nate Starks 10 for 7. UCLA can't control a game on offense, and that's problematic, and I think UCLA might miss Noel Mazzoni a little bit.
Yeah.
I think they do. With how much success Paul Perkins had recently, that's problematic, and Wazoo was good, but not great. I think Luke Falk had a sort of pedestrian game. I only watched the extended highlights in this game and read a good amount, but Washington State was a little off. I went to sleep at halftime. It seemed like they were going to crockpot this game. They were up 10-0 at halftime. I figured they would be good throughout the second half, but they let UCLA creep back in this game. But good for Washington State for surviving an ugly game, and I believe inclement weather. I think it was raining pretty hard.
So Washington State, very quickly, has... at ASU, win. At Oregon State,
win.
Home against Arizona,
win.
Home against Cal,
probable win, but shootout, so who knows.
At Colorado.
Davis Webb's health, too.
At Colorado. Tough game. Up. Should be a good game.
Yeah.
And then home against Washington in the Apple Cup. Probably a loss, but a very meaningful Apple Cup.
Yeah, Washington State starts out the season losing to an FCS team, a very good FCS team in Eastern Washington. They lose close to a good Boise State team. Wazoo's good. Wazoo's got an ideal schedule moving forward. They already have the meat of it behind them because they had Boise, Oregon, and Stanford in, I think, 3 out of 4 weeks. Wazoo, good for them. They're now 3-0 in conference. Washington's 3-0 in conference, and they're one of 4 or 5 at least decent teams, and that's all. The Pac-12 is surprisingly shallow this year.
There you have it. Anything else?
Western Michigan shut out Akron, Ty.
Boom.
They shut out Akron. They finally lost a ball. They lost a turnover, which was bound to happen. But Western Michigan's real good, and they'll be fine all year long. Navy East Carolina got postponed of effects from the hurricane and the storm the week before. San Diego State with a tough win on the road. Donnell Pumphrey should be a name that people continue to recognize as great. He's a tiny running back for San Diego State who just puts up 200-yard games after 200-yard games. The ending of the Houston game. Did you see that?
Yeah.
The 13 men on the field, couple of them offside.
Weird ending.
Houston survives. They ride Greg Ward, get everything they possibly can out of him, but very strange ending, and good survival from Houston in a bit of a shootout. Outside of that, as I'm scrolling through the games, Utah-Oregon State was garbage football, but good for Utah State's defense, and that was in a storm as well. But Utah, especially on offense, they can run the ball some. They are struggling to throw the ball. Again, stormy, but that wasn't everything. Army beat Lafayette, Ty. I'm so sad to see it.
62-7.
But how do you go against the United States Army like that?
Hold on.
Yeah.
Very quickly. Did you happen to see what happened up there in Worcester, Mass?
I did see what happened.
A huge upset by the Crusaders. Mm-hmm. And they bumped their bobblehead day.
Right.
Until a date in the future where we had a Verballer email us and say that he will be in attendance. And that if we're nice to him, that maybe we'll be able to ascertain some of those bobbleheads. So we will be in touch, sir. Thank you for your generosity.
Eastern Michigan is a game away from bowl eligibility. They're now 5-2. Future Notre Dame coach Bob Davey moves to 3-3 with New Mexico.
You scoundrel.
Outside of that, USF continues to win. They're 6-1. They haven't lost in conference. Willie Taggart doing a very nice job down there. Temple continues to win. You discount the Owls, they discount you.
Shut up.
You discount them. We built this show on the Owls, Ty. We built it on the Owls, and that's all I have.
All right. So look, here's what we got next week. Okay. If you're going to try and do some long-range planning.
Is it a good week next week?
We've got two games on Thursday.
Okay.
You've got Miami at Virginia Tech on Thursday at 7, which is interesting. You've also got a late Thursday game, Boise State at home against BYU.
It's going to get weird.
On Saturday, you have a wide open window of opportunity until about 3:30. Because at 3:30, you've got Alabama at home against Texas A&M. You've got Auburn at home at 6 o'clock against Arkansas. And then we've got a late game between Ohio State and Penn State, that one in Happy Valley. And then the other big one here that jumped out at me was Ole Miss at LSU at 9 on ESPN. So we've got a bunch of later games that I think are headliners and some other ones, obviously, that will drizzle in. We've got like NC State at Louisville, which could be interesting. We've got Oklahoma at Texas Tech, which I think could be interesting. Colorado at Stanford, which is a lot more interesting than we thought. Oregon Cal.
That's Friday. And for the love of God, 10:30 kickoff. I have to stay up. I don't have to. But so I'm going to stay up that late to watch that garbage. Damn it.
It's an interesting week. There are some interesting headliner games, and we will do our best to put our spin on it on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Okay.
So take time Saturday morning, Saturday midday. Come up with a recommendation. I'm going to say make French toast for a loved one.
Okay.
What do you say that people should do until 3:30 Eastern, 12:30 Pacific?
I have a special European way to make scrambled eggs.
How's that?
You make it in a pot as opposed to a frying pan.
I've seen that before. Do you use like heavy cream or anything?
I don't, because the solid wife doesn't like it.
Okay.
But
are we talking about a soft scramble here?
It's a bit of a soft scramble, yeah.
We talking chives?
My new favorite way to make eggs.
Interesting. So a soft scramble.
I learned it off Gordon Ramsay on YouTube.
I think I've seen this. I think I've seen this video.
Telling you it works. It's way better.
I do it in a pan, but I do the soft scramble thing. I will add a little bit of cheese to it.
Yep.
I will chop some chives. You wait to season after because the seasoning brings the water out, and you don't want that during the cooking process, Ty.
See, Gordon Ramsay says to throw the salt in.
I thought he said to save the salt.
No.
Interesting.
No.
Okay.
We'll talk. We'll talk about this.
So yeah, learn a soft scramble. I mean, eggs are involved in French toast as well. Do something fun.
Okay. Well, Dan, this has been fun. I know it's been a long weekend for both of us, so I'm looking forward to a few days off here. Certainly, we'll be studying these matchups and giving you woefully terrible picks on Wednesday, but
obviously.
We'd urge you to come back and subscribe and download for free at itunes.com/solidverbal. Don't forget to give us a follow on Twitter and especially on Facebook at facebook.com/solidverbal. And check us out on Instagram, Snapchat, and all sorts of other places. Also, send us pictures of the t-shirts because you should have gotten them by now. If you haven't yet, you will in the early part of the coming week. They look awesome. People are pretty excited about them. They've already started sending their pictures in. So all due credit to our friends over at Threadbird who helped us out. And of course to you, Mr. Rubenstein, for your design wisdom. Looks very sharp.
Good. I'm glad to hear it.
For that guy over there, Dan Rubenstein. For myself, Ty Hildenbrand. Thanks again for tuning into the show. Catch y'all in a few days. Talk some week 8. Stay solid.
Peace.